honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Coming down the home stretch now with retired Army Lieutenant Colonel Glenn Montgomery of Colorado Springs, Colorado. He served in Europe in World War II in a mortar platoon with the 70th Infantry Division, becoming intimately familiar with the enemy and its weaponry.
Now, there's another weapon that the Germans had that they were master typists. That was the 88. Wow. You get to know about where the round comes in and hear it coming through there, and whack, whether it's a tree burst or whether it's a ground burst. A tree burst is a whack. It doesn't go boom. It goes whack, and and you know, for some reason, somehow, some message gets to you, you hear them flying. You know about where it is, and you know whether or not you're safe or you better get down. The wise guy doesn't pay any attention to the signals. He gets down anyway.
Maybe that's one of the reasons you're still here. Yeah. I'm just wondering, did you ever have moments where you thought you weren't going to come home?
Absolutely. Well, this is one incident that took place when we were back at the town that sometimes the Germans claim it, sometimes the French claim it. We were in position, our company commander was named Christian. First sergeant company commander is always in the little company headquarters, wherever it is, and whatever it is. The word came up that there was a wounded in no man's land and wanted volunteers to go out and bring him in, because they had no idea whether he was a line crosser or just a lost GI, or was a real spy. So about mortar platoon, I believe there were eight of us volunteered to say, yeah, we'll go get him. Said we did. And I came to the conclusion soon after we walked out there that the Germans had no intention of hitting us. They shoot at a tree, hit the ground over here with an 8mm rifle, and we had a stretcher with us, and we got out there, and he was pretty well shot up. We got out, loaded him on that. I'll talk to him a little bit. Lieutenant wanted to know how where he was hit. Said he didn't think he was hit, but maybe his hip, but his hip was shattered. So anyway, we got him loaded up and started back, and this terrain we went out on was so uneven and muddy and full of everything. We couldn't carry him at the same time and move the body back here. So we went down off of the side of the hill onto the road down here, walking up this road with his stretcher and this guy on this trailer. And every once in a while, the creek was over here, and the gunfire came from above the creek into him. He suffered, I don't remember, five or six more wounds.
While he was on the stretcher?
While he was on the stretcher, yeah.
And you guys are carrying the stretcher?
Yeah, we're carrying the stretcher. And get back, and somebody asked, are they still shooting at him? And he says, you damn right, they're like to shot the heel off of my boot. Well, we speeded up a little bit and brought the guy back. And we came back and dropped the stretcher near the CP. And I guess he was there waiting to be treated outside the aid station. He had several more bullet holes. Oh, he was deader than a doornail. We concluded it was not us he was after. They were after that. And lo and behold, he had items of German clothing on. So he may have been, we never was able to confirm it, he may have been a German agent coming to us, and them, or he had German clothing on, being a Frenchman, going back with information gained from the Germans. So we never was able to pin it on. We gave it over, gave the information to the two sergeants came up.
So the implication is?
We concluded there were two possible solutions.
Yeah.
One was a Frenchman going over and getting a German for intelligence reasons and coming back and wounded on the way back. Or a German coming over this way in a German clothes after an American or a Frenchman for intelligence reasons and was shot down by possibly by the people who did the shooting, knew who he was and what he had, and they didn't want us to have it.
Right. So when we first hear you tell the story, we're thinking, boy, if they're shooting the guy on the stretcher, they could have shot all of you. And you're saying they didn't want to shoot you. They wanted to take him out.
I think they were aiming at us because shot the sergeant's heel off of his boot.
Oh, and he was carrying the stretcher, too.
No, he was walking. He was carrying a rifle.
Yeah, that's a pretty close call. And that, you know, that makes me wonder, too, were there some moments in the war where you lost someone that you had gotten to know?
That day we lost Captain Christian. That was a bad day. That was a bad, because Captain Christian was a kind of a guy that you really, you bend over backwards to help and you go another backwards flip to make sure you help. And then when you lose that incentive, it hurts.
What would you say was the hardest thing for you to deal with over there? What challenged you the most?
To have a friend either so badly wounded that he would die or was killed on the spot. I preferred him to be killed on the spot because I found that the ones that are still alive, knowing who I was, trying to, well, when you see my wife and my children, tell them this and blah, blah, blah. But the best thing was if a man that was you close to was shot and killed, dead, buried, that's the end of it. Go do your job.
What a way to live. Do you have any particular memories about VE Day and when the Germans finally surrendered?
Actually, I was on a truck being transferred to the another unit for the purpose of recovering contraband. Had three regiments. This was the 15th Infantry Regiment. Three battalions to the regiment. First battalion would surround the town, or the first two battalions would surround the town. The other town start this in and go through and search everything. Women, children, house, hospital, everything for contraband. Cigarettes, mostly. But the Poles were, as far as some of the stuff that the Poles did, they had access to a lot of weaponry. They would cut the, say, take the Mauser for, you know what a Mauser looks like? Okay. Cut it off, it's a pistol grip. Cut the barrel off about 3 or 4 inches, throw the rest away, and use that at night to do their dirty work. Wetzlar was the NCO, German NCO parade ground. Mm. Their buildings were still there. Not too much damaged either. At Wetzlar, we had about 12,000 white Russian prisoners, and we had to take them back to Russia. And reloaded them. I rode on top as a guard. I was a guard sergeant by that time, sergeant. And we had two men per train car on here with prisoners in between in the car itself. We could take them to White Russia. I can't remember the name of the towns because I can't pronounce them in the search place. And unload them. And, of course, we had to stop. And it was on the German Polish border. Anyway, you had to stop there because the gauge of the railroad was different. They had to take the car off there and put it on the German chassis so they could pull it on, take it where we wanted to go into Russia. Huh. But things that I have learned, either on purpose or accidentally, things are not always told what the real truth is. For instance, the attitude towards Americans, and not necessarily wrong, about how badly the Germans treated the white Russians. Germany had announced that they were, Hitler that is, that they were going to take the land in Russia because they needed it for Lebensraum. And when you get there, most of them were Germans wanting to go back anyway.
And you told me you put in a total of 31 years in the Army?
31 years in the Army.
I mean, we can't possibly tell all those stories, but what was your rank when you finished up?
Lieutenant Colonel.
I forgot to salute when I walked in.
Yep, you can go back and come back.
I'm sure you made a couple guys do that over the years. But you did tell me that you earned the Purple Heart. How did that happen?
I remember being in the hospital on a cot, and they came by and put a Purple Heart on the bed.
How long were you in the hospital?
About 6 weeks. I got a shell fragment in my right groin. And I went back to the hospital in outside of London. I was right across the street from the British Opera House. Next morning, got up. Stuff was scattered all over the room, all over the street, all over the road, everything. My first experience was the German rocket that they fired, the V-2, had hit the edge of the serpentine. And it blew a hole in there that you could put a serpentine in two or three times. But it missed this opera house. Even the trip back from the hospital, back to the front line in southern Germany, is a laugh.
What happened?
I was evacuated through the company evacuation system. Went back, I got on a French train with no seats, no cover, no top. And bumping and bumping and bumping, here I am. All the way back to the English Channel. Get on the ship to go back to the mainland. The bunks they had were stretched over the mess hall tables. So my trip across the English Channel, I'd say, was dining with the British. and went through the depots. Ripples. As a matter of fact, I think probably the time that I had landed in Marseille and came home through Bremerhaven, probably I prayed to the Lord more than I had in my life. I had more close calls in Korea than I did in Germany.
What were you doing in Korea?
I was heavy weapons commander. The job that I was doing before I became the big boy, Korea and field artillery. I like field artillery. I wanted to be in the field artillery. Finally, I wrote enough transfer requests that I was transferred to field artillery. And from there, lined me up to Fort Bliss, Texas, and I became a nuclear weapons inspector. Korea was not a fun place.
Do you remember how cold it got in Korea?
10 times as cold as it was in Europe. We used to sit under, take a 6x. I hope you're familiar with all these terms. Okay. Sit on the, start the engine. Most of them are straight sixes. Two or three guys sits on the right fender, two or three of them with the hood up. Put your feet with the boots on the manifold, exhaust manifold, and idle the engine. Warm your feet. Warm your hands. Warm your whatever. Oh, yeah. Korea was twice the misery that was in Europe.
And what were you doing during the Vietnam War?
I was a field artillery company commander, along with the 24th Battalion, which was the last artillery battalion in the Army, black, 35th Division. Vietnam was nothing but bloody American soldiers. I don't have much to say about that place. I think it was the wrong war in the wrong place, run with the wrong man.
But that doesn't take away from the courage and the sacrifice of you and all those other guys, and especially those 58,000 names on that wall.
There's a lot of truth to that. That's no credit. However, you didn't sign up for this or for that. You signed up for the whole. Whatever comes your way, that's your job, whether you were assigned to it or not.
You know, there's not too many guys still with us that served in World War II. There's a lot fewer that can say they served in World War II, Korea, and the Vietnam War, but 31 years in the Army, and I just want to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country and for telling us these stories. I'm curious. I don't know if this is an easy question to answer. Maybe it is. You're 98 and a half years old now. If you look back over all those years, is there something that you would say that you're most proud of or most thankful for?
Yes. We had a club in the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th grades called Jace Us Boys. 14 members. I remember every one of them. The girls were the hi-hats. My count right now is there were 7 hi-hats married, 7 Just Us Boys. We had sponsors like Chief of Police. My sponsor was Ben and Ray Clothier. We had more fun than you could possibly think. And I think I learned to be a GI. It started with Buddy and Douglas Nicks in their backyard with a big cardboard box and a hole in the ground. That became just us boys. Finally, there were 14 of us.
I know you haven't been to the National World War II Memorial yet. There's a honor flight of Southern Colorado here would love to take you, I'm sure, and I hope they will. But if you go there, they've got a wall of gold stars. There's 4,000 gold stars, and that represents over 400,000 Americans who died in the war, people like Captain Christian, who you told us about. All these years later, how do we need to remember those people, those who didn't come home from the war?
If you were in the war, not necessarily as a soldier, because the Sereneans were in the war just as much as anybody, but boy, that place is loaded with memories.
Well, maybe that's my last question, Glenn, and thank you for all your time. Why does it still matter? Why is it important that people my age and younger know about what you and your generation did?
Because we haven't learned how not to do it.
That succinct sentence says so much. What a sobering thought for us to reflect upon as we wrap up our time with Glenn Montgomery, 98 years old. Thanks so much for listening to Hometown Heroes today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.